Hello there. You're listening to the Black Country Talking News, and this week's edition is for the 11th of August, 2021.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by Sightloss charity, Beacon Centre. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, "Alexa, play Black Country Talking News." Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods: calling 01902 213 210, visiting our website www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. I'm reading this week. We have myself, Rob, writer Graham Fisher, Mina, Ed, Craig, Liz, Helen, Tanya, Simon, Angela, Christine, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country. We have the quiz with Mina, news from Wolves and West Bromwich Albion, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger, an article on the Glorious 12th, the weather, Craig's Black Country joke book, information from the RNIB, news about dancing classes designed for people with visual impairments, and rounding all that off, we get to hear Graham Fisher's In My Opinion. But first, we have the following message. Do you live in the Black Country and use buses to commute? The Black Country Sightloss Council invite you to meet the buses at Wolverhampton Bus Depot. Together with National Express, we have the opportunity for you to come along and walk through the layout of different bus styles, chat to drivers and training managers about your experience and discuss how changes can be made to improve accessibility on the buses in the region. Drop in any time between 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. on Friday 27th of August at Wolverhampton Bus Depot. This is at the National Express West Midlands Wolverhampton Garage, Park Lane, Vorlings Park, Wolverhampton, WV10 9QG. Now we have our Guess the Sound quiz. I'm going to play a sound clip, and all you have to do is simply guess what it is. So, here's this week's clip. Have a think on that, and Mina will reveal the answer later alongside the usual quiz answers. We start then, as always, with some local news. Brought to us by myself, Rob, Ed, Angela, Liz, and first up, it's Christine.
A huge plan to build housing on Greenbelt in Dudley has been accused of being a cloak and dagger operation by the leader of the town's Labour Party. Councillor Quaidar Zaida, who represents Netherton, Woodside and St Andrew's Ward, accused the Conservatives of failing to protect Greenbelt and green spaces as part of the controversial Black Country housing plan. Councillor Zaida said, "My position is clear. When Dudley is full, it is full. The local services, including GPs, hospitals, schools and roads, are already stretched, and by squeezing more people in, by building homes on our fields, it is completely unforgivable. I would urge everyone to write to Dudley Council to oppose these plans or send me your concerns directly and I will put them forward on your behalf." Under the Black Country Plan, around 6% of the region's total greenbelt land will be lost to provide 7,720 new homes and 47 hectares of employment land. Current figures estimate a need for 76,076 new homes across the region, along with 565 hectares of land for employment uses by 2039. Dudley's contribution to the draft Black Country Plan is to build 13,235 new homes and 22 hectares of employment land. but council chiefs say it amounts to no more than 3% of the town's greenbelt land, and they are confident they will lose no more than that. Council leader Patrick Harley said Councillor Zaida had a childish response to current housing development plans and believes under a Labour council the authority would hand acres and acres of greenbelt to developers. He said Councillor Zaida in his response shows a complete lack of understanding of the Black Country plan, and his childish comments about being full showcases the real threat the Greenbelt would have from speculative development under a Labour council.
Police officers in our region have been attacked more than 2,000 times during the coronavirus pandemic, with many offenders using the threat of giving officers COVID as a weapon. Offenders have deliberately spat or coughed in the faces of officers, playing on the fear of COVID-19. The number of assaults across England and Wales has been described as disgusting by the Police Federation, which says those confronting police are often using the virus to threaten police. Home Office data showed 1,084 attacks were recorded by West Midlands Police between April last year and March 2021, an increase of 37 from the year before. Staffordshire Police registered 413 attacks and West Mercia Police 621 over a period that included three lockdowns. It comes as police chiefs in the region called for tougher sentences to be imposed against people who carry out the attacks, to show it will not be tolerated. John Apter, National Chairman of the Police Federation, said, "Many of these recorded attacks involve vile individuals who have spat on or coughed at police officers, weaponising the virus and threatening to spread it to them and their families. This unjustified violence is a stain on society and needs to be dealt with robustly." West Midlands Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Foster said, "Assaults on our police officers are totally unacceptable. Nobody goes to work to be attacked and abused. Police officers run towards danger when most would go the other way. They deserve our greatest respect for the work they do to keep us safe. I support tougher sentences for those who attack police officers and other emergency workers. It will not be tolerated."
Liam Byrne is under investigation by a parliamentary watchdog over claims he used his expenses as an MP to fund his campaign to be mayor. The Labour candidate is accused of diverting public money intended for parliamentary duties during his campaign to become West Midlands mayor. It has led to the Independent Parliamentary Standards Authority, the IPSA, launching an investigation into Birmingham's MP's staff and office costs. But the claims have been dismissed by members of Mr. Byrne's team, who claim they are purely politically fabricated, as they welcome the inquiry. A spokesman for IPSA, which confirmed the investigation, said the compliance officer for the Independent Parliamentary Standards Authority has opened an investigation to determine whether Mr. Liam Byrne MP has been paid an amount under the MP's scheme of business costs and expenses that should not have been allowed. An investigation will be conducted into claims submitted under the following areas of the scheme: staffing and office costs in 2019-20. In accordance with the legislation and the procedures for investigation made thereunder, no further information will be published until the investigation has been concluded. The move comes after Tory MP Andrew Bridgen wrote to the authority which monitors the expenses schemes for MPs, demanding an investigation into an alleged gross misuse of parliamentary expenses by the Birmingham Hodge Hill MP. The letter sent to IPSA by Mr. Bridgen includes a reference to a claim from an unnamed local election candidate who reportedly said Mr. Byrne's parliamentary staff were being made to work full-time on the mayoral election.
Spending on fixing potholes and other road repairs has fluctuated wildly in Wolverhampton over the last 5 years, new figures have shown. There was a £1 million spend on potholes in the city in 2018-19, followed by another outlay of £368,000 during the following 12-month period. That figure then fell to 200,000 in 2020-21. There was also a big difference in how much was spent on resurfacing projects year on year. The City Council spent £3.1 million on road resurfacing in 2017-18, dropping to around £1 million the following 2 years, before rising back to £3.3 million in 2020-21. Data, released following a Freedom of Information request, showed a leap in the number of potholes fixed in Wolverhampton for the first half of 2021, with 4,559 fixed up to the end of June. This compared to 4,860 for the whole of 2020, though the pandemic may have had an impact on work completed last year. Council bosses said they were reliant on government funding for road repairs, as well as council tax, and the data shows how expenditure can change from year to year. Councillor Steve Evans, Cabinet Member for City Environment and Climate Change, said, "Last year, 209,000 square metres of road were either resurfaced or surface treated. This is a preventative maintenance to prevent potholes occurring in the first place. We have a base budget for highways repairs, and, in addition to that, our spend can increase if we are given additional government grants or funding in particular years. We have a base budget for highways repairs, and in addition to that, our spend can increase if we are given additional government grant funding in particular years. For example, last year saw significant additional investment from challenge funding, and in 2018-19, there was additional pothole funding made available by the government."
An investigation has been launched after a series of distraction burglaries in the Black Country where pensioners' homes have been targeted. Police say there have been four occasions where fraudsters have posed as pest control workers and then stolen from their victims' addresses. The crimes have been committed since the middle of the past week, with two in Wolverhampton, one in Sandwell and one in Dudley. Victims have been distracted while their homes are searched, leading to thousands of pounds and other personal belongings being taken. Between two and four offenders have been involved each time, and detectives are now working to establish whether the crimes are linked. Detective Chief Inspector Rod Rose from the Force's CID said, "At this stage, we believe there is a link between at least some, if not all, of these distraction burglaries. This is an awful crime, which is made all the worse by elderly and vulnerable members of our communities being targeted. The home is somewhere you should feel the safest, yet these burglars take advantage of being welcomed into your property under false pretences. We're following a number of lines of inquiry, but I believe there will be people out there who know who is involved and can help. They do not deserve protection after preying on the vulnerable. If anyone receives a knock on the door from people claiming to be from the police, council, a utility company, or any other organisation, always ask to see identification. And if anyone sees anything suspicious or has been visited by doorstep callers who they do not believe to be genuine, they should contact police as they may have important information."
Now it's time to hand over to Helen, who has for us this week's Beacon Update.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from the Beacon Centre. How are you? Well, despite being the middle of the summer holidays, well, almost anyway, we're as busy as ever here at Beacon. First up this week, we wanted to tell you a bit about some of the equipment which can help make life a little easier if you're living with sight loss. One of the things our members tell us that they miss is reading the paper and having a go at the crossword. Well, a video magnifier won't give you the answers, but it will give you the clues. You can also adjust the magnification and contrast colours to suit you. If you'd like to try a video magnifier, call Beacon Sight Loss Advisors for an appointment and bring a crossword or anything else that you struggle to read with you. You can ring them on 01902 880 111. And don't forget, they can help with all your sight loss advice. Now, as you know, all of our seven retail stores are back open post the COVID-19 lockdowns, and we've been delighted to welcome our customers back. Don't forget though, you can still get your Beacon bargains online. We've got all kinds of things for sale on our eBay store. We've recently had free computer game consoles up for grabs. We've also got everything from pottery and plates to new clothes and DVDs. You can find us online at www.ebay.co.uk/USR/Beacon Charity Shop. That's www.ebay.co.uk/USR/Beacon Charity Shop. And don't forget, every purchase helps us support someone with sight loss. Now, lastly this week, it's recently been International Friendship Day. What a wonderful idea for a day, hey? So we thought, what better time to say thank you to our amazing telephone befriending volunteers who can change someone's life with a friendly phone call. If you benefit from the scheme, you'll know what a difference it makes. We're really proud of our telephone befriending project and what we can do for people. If you'd like to find out more, or perhaps even sign up, why not get in touch? Call us on 01902 880111 or email inquiries@beaconvision.org. That's inquiries@beaconvision.org. We're also always on the lookout for new volunteer callers and would welcome people with sight loss. Again, if you'd like to find out more how to become one of our volunteers, just give us a call via 01902 880111 or you can email people@beaconvision.org. That's people@beaconvision.org. Thanks, and hopefully I'll see you all soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for that Beacon update, Helen. Now we head into some more local news. And starting us off, we have Liz.
Plans have been formally submitted to demolish the landmark Dudley Hippodrome and replace it with a £25 million university park. Dudley Council has submitted a planning application to knock down the derelict 1930s building on Castle Hill, which was last used in 2009 as a bingo hall. Campaigners have fought for years to save the landmark Art Deco-style building, which once hosted comic legends Laurel and Hardy, but Dudley Council sees its demolition as integral to a £1 billion regeneration plan for the town. The plan to knock the old theatre down and replace it with a university park was revealed last year, and last week, Housing Secretary Robert Jenrick visited Dudley, where he confirmed a bid for £25 million from the town's fund to finance the project has been successful. As a result, the Conservative-run local authority has now formally submitted its proposals, which will be subject to consultation and approval by councillors. A community group was previously given the keys to the Hippodrome, with volunteers devoting a huge amount of time to cleaning the site up, but they were taken back by Dudley Council when chiefs ruled they would not be able to come up with the necessary cash to bring the building back to life. Plans to host a driverless car testing centre at the Hippodrome were also considered before the University Park plans were chosen. The new educational facility is expected to be up and running by autumn of 2024 and will be around the corner from the Black Country and Marches Institute of Technology, which is due to start teaching higher education students science, technology, engineering and maths this year.
Two youths scaled a fence before setting fire to charity donations kept at the Old Sainsbury's in Wolverhampton city centre, the council has said. The young males were captured on CCTV climbing into the site last Thursday evening, according to Wolverhampton Council. Flames tore through a skip full of donations for the YMCA charity, which is renting storage space from Sainsbury's, sending plumes of smoke into the air. The majority of the damage was in the skip. However, a few areas of the former supermarket building at St George's Parade were scorched. No damage was caused to the Grade 2 listed St George's Church, which is also located on the site. A spokesman from Wolverhampton Council said the fire service quickly contained a skip fire in the storage bay of the St George's site that CCTV shows was started deliberately by two young males who scaled the gates. The site currently remains under lease to Sainsbury's, who have sublet the storage bay to YMCA for charity donation storage. The damage caused by the fire is limited to the skip, and a few areas of the building have signs of scorching. The historic church has been unaffected by the fire. We will now be holding further discussions with Sainsbury's, who will be reviewing security of the site.
A coronavirus patient who spent more than 3 weeks in a coma says he is extremely lucky to be alive. Mike Fisher, aged 31, from Cannock, has been in hospital since January after suffering a collapse at home. He was admitted to critical care at New Cross Hospital, Wolverhampton, on January the 9th, where he was placed in an induced coma until the 1st of February. Mr. Fisher, a West Bromwich Albion fan, is now in rehabilitation at Cannock Chase Hospital, having got over the worst of COVID-19, and has thanked NHS staff for his excellent care. He said, "I passed out because of COVID and my sister Tina called the ambulance and I woke up in hospital," said Mike. "I didn't even know I'd been in a coma. Thankfully, the nurses were brilliant. I couldn't fault them. The therapy team too have done a fantastic job. They've got me standing and walking again. I can't thank them enough. I didn't realise until a doctor spoke to me how poorly I was. I'm extremely lucky to be alive." During his time in hospital, Mr. Fisher, a McDonald's crew member who works at the Longford Island branch in Cannock, missed his own 31st birthday on January the 29th. He spent 68 days in intensive care, including the time in a coma, on New Cross's integrated critical care unit. As a result of his long stay in hospital, Mr. Fisher currently has limited upper limb function, but has enjoyed attending the craft group on the ward at Cannock Chase Hospital, which aims to improve his range of movement.
Dudley Borough has retained its nationally recognised dementia-friendly status for another year. The Alzheimer's Society gives the dementia-friendly recognition to communities which demonstrate they are improving inclusion and quality of life for people with dementia in a number of ways. For the fifth year running, the borough has retained the status in recognition of the work of Dudley Dementia Action Alliance, which Dudley Council is a member of, along with other organisations including Carers of People Living with Dementia, NHS Dudley at Russell's Hall Hospital, Healthwatch Dudley, Home Instead, Hales Owen BID and Dudley Carers Network. The Alliance has continued to meet virtually throughout the pandemic and influence people, the community and businesses. And in the last 12 months, the group has been able to encourage local shops to allow people with dementia to accompany their carers for essential shopping at a time when nationally supermarkets were discouraging more than one person to shop. Councillor Nicholas Barlow, Dudley Council's Cabinet Member for Health and Adult Social Care, said, "With an ageing population and more people being affected by dementia, it's really important we take action to improve people's quality of life and avoid people feeling isolated in their communities. The work of the Alliance is crucial. It brings together like-minded individuals and organisations which really want to make a difference. It is great news that Dudley Borough has been recognised as a dementia-friendly borough once again, and I congratulate everyone involved in achieving this."
A Wolverhampton school looks set to increase the number of places it offers to cope with growing demand across the city. Hill Avenue Primary Academy in Lanesfield has submitted a proposal to Wolverhampton Council planners to build four new classrooms at its current site. The aim is to increase the capacity of the school by adding 105 children to the current 329 on the roll from 2022. Academy bosses said it is becoming increasingly popular with parents in the area too, with first choice preferences shooting up over the last 5 years. As well as the new classrooms, Hill Avenue, which is part of the Manor Multi-Academy Trust, will also build a new reception entrance area if the plans are approved. In their application, the school is rated outstanding by Ofsted and would be suitable for an expansion to deliver the extra spaces. It said, "The main challenge that the City of Wolverhampton faces in relation to the organisation of school provision is ensuring that sufficient high-quality school places are available to meet the needs of school communities across the city. Citywide demand for primary school places is projected to increase year on year from academic year 2020 to 21 to 2022-23 from 3,506 to 3,562. The Academy has become more popular over recent years. The number of first preferences has increased by 238% between 2017 and 2021.
Now it's time to hear from Mina, who asked for us the questions for this week's quiz.
Hello and welcome to the Flashback Quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question 1. In what year was the first recorded sighting of the Loch Ness Monster made? Question 2. What infamous insects have a day to recognise them on the 20th of August? Question 3. What is the only birthstone of August? Question 4. Which volcano erupted and engulfed Pompeii? And finally, question 5. What is a very popular boy's name in Sweden? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later in the show. But for now, good luck.
Thank you for those quiz questions, Mina. Now we have another block of local news. And starting us first, it's Angela.
Construction of Wolverhampton's eye-catching modern office development, I9, has been completed and marks a major milestone in the creation of a thriving commercial quarter at the heart of the city's award-winning interchange. The I9 project follows the success of the I10 complex on the opposite side of Railway Drive in the city centre. Both have been delivered by the council and leading property developer Ion. And contractor Graham has constructed 6 floors of office space, including the potential for 5,600 square feet of retail or leisure space. The building will house the second headquarters of the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government on the ground and fourth floors, with agreements close to being finalised with other big name occupiers to take the remainder of the office space. It is the first office in the Black Country to be awarded wired-scored gold certification in recognition of its digital connectivity and infrastructure, and is also excellent rated to guarantee the long-term sustainability of the building and lower any potential impacts on the surrounding environment. Councillor Stephen Simpkins, Cabinet Member for City Economy, said the completion of the I9 development, particularly during the pandemic, is another massive achievement for the council, and I'm delighted to see our vision become a reality.
Sports clubs in the Black Country are gearing up for a boost in interest following the Olympics. Each time a major tournament is held, like the Olympics or Commonwealth Games, more people turn their attention to activities seen on the television. Cycling is one of the sports that sports clubs in the Black Country are expecting to see a boost in. And the region may get an extra boost with the arrival of the Commonwealth Games in Birmingham next year. David Viner, chairman of Hales Owen Cycling Club, said, "Following the Olympics in London, there was a definite increase in members in sport, certainly in cycling, and I think athletics as well. Obviously, as the years go by, that decreases again. Definitely, the Olympic Games and the Commonwealth Games should see an increase in cycling and athletics. At the moment, we have about 190 members. After the Olympics in London, we went up to 250. I definitely think there would be another increase again." An avid enthusiast of boxing, Paul Goff, who is chairman of Priory Boxing Club in Dudley, always welcomes the arrival of the Olympics. He said, "I think the Olympics motivates people to get into sport 100%. I mean, now you will see a surge, like a fad on skateboarding and cycling, not so much swimming. You will probably see a bit of swimming. Things like skateboarding and biking, definitely." He is hoping to launch plans in the future to set up a new facility within Dudley at Meadow Road Learning Centre that would enable youngsters to practice sports like BMX and skateboarding, which are featured in these latest Olympics.
Wet weather could not dampen the spirits as a city centre became a festival centre for a day. The Enjoy Wolverhampton Live Free Festival on Saturday, August the 7th, saw Queen Square transformed into a live venue with a stage at the end of the road surrounded by seating. There was live entertainment for youngsters during the day and a full live concert in the evening, and despite the changeable weather, there was a steady stream of people coming up to watch the show. Those in attendance were also able to enjoy a range of food and drink choices, with the Parisian running an outdoor bar and Thai kitchen among those offering food. Entertainment included Sid Sloan from CBeebies, a performance of Disney classics, a DJ set from Graham Park, and an evening headline set from M People singer Heather Small, supported by S Club 7 singer Joe Meara. The event was organised and funded by Wolverhampton Business Improvement District, for whom BID director Cherry Shine said the day was about having fun and bringing footfall back to the city centre. Tracy Powis was among many who had stopped by to watch the event with her daughter Rebecca Powis and her granddaughter Charlotte Strong. She said, "It's been great to stand here and watch the show and just keep up with what's going on, and we've all enjoyed our day so far. I think it's really good for the children as it gives them something to do, and I think it's really good for the city to see events like this taking place."
The final touches have been applied to a war memorial in the Black Country, completing a £10,000 transformation. A memorial wall, information boards, memorial stones and a soldier now take pride of place at the heart of Kent Street in Upper Gornal. The project came together over 3 years and features the names of those from the area who died in the First and Second World Wars. New flower beds and subtle lighting have also been introduced as part of the finishing touches to the project, which have been welcomed by residents. Kieran Casey, former Upper Gornal and Woodsetton councillor, who started the project alongside the Oval and Tudor Tenants and Residents Association, said, "It's amazing to see these works now completed, and it just goes to show what can be achieved when everyone comes together for the good of the community. This memorial has well and truly become something that is right at the heart of our community, and which we are all extremely proud of." When the project was started over 3 years ago, local residents didn't have anywhere publicly in Upper Gornal to pay their respects on Remembrance Day, or that constant display of the names of those who have given their lives. As a result of this, we now have somewhere where we can not only pay our respects on Remembrance Day, but that will be a constant reminder to all the brave local people who have paid the ultimate sacrifice fighting for our freedom, something that we must never forget.
Connor Cody has told boxer Ben Whittaker he is the toast of Wolves after winning Olympic silver. Whittaker, who starred in the light heavyweight division at Tokyo 2020, is returning to the Midlands and will attend Wolves' opening home match of the season against Tottenham on August the 22nd. Cody revealed the 24-year-old's exploits in Japan had been the talk of the dressing room. Speaking to Whittaker on 5 Live, he said, "Everyone here, all the boys have been asking about you. You've done yourself and your family proud. The pride that is running through everyone for you is incredible. You need to bring that medal home. Let us all see it." Whittaker's father, Tony Wilson, works in the tunnel at Molyneux on match days, and Cody revealed how he had spoken to the boxer ahead of his gold medal bout against Cuba's Arlen Lopez. The Dollaston ace's refusal to wear his medal on the podium has drawn some criticism, but Cody, who suffered his own heartbreak with England in last month's Euro 2020 final, was sympathetic. He explained, "I don't think people understand sometimes, as a sportsman, you work so hard to get the win. When it happens, you have that much emotion running through you, that much adrenaline, you're thinking about the worst because you've just been beaten. When you take a step back and look at what you've done, you go, wow, I have done something serious there." The best thing about Ben is he is 24. He can go again and again and again. It is a moment to look back on and think, what an achievement. It was fantastic.
Up now, we have the following news from the RNIB. The Government National Disability Strategy, which promises to improve the lives of disabled people as a part of the government's levelling up agenda, has now been published. While there are some policies in there that will benefit blind and partially sighted people, very little is new, and even less is cross-governmental or strategic. RNIB CEO Matt Stringer responded to the National Disability Strategy announcement. Finally, the government appears to be acknowledging the scale of the change that is urgently needed for disabled people. Progress over recent decades has been too slow, and the unacceptable truth is that life is still so much harder than it needs to be if you're blind or partially sighted. We're pleased to see that many of the changes we've been campaigning for have been included in this strategy, but this really is just the beginning. If the government is truly committed to levelling up the country, then it must keep listening to disabled people. A deep, genuine and empathetic understanding of the lived experiences of sight loss must be at the heart of policy making. Only then can we realise our shared vision of a country which is truly fair and equal for everyone. RNIB's full response to the National Disability Strategy can be found at rnib.in/NDS. In other news, RNIB is pleased to announce that you'll be able to get RNIB talking books available through an Amazon smart speaker, as well as through their usual library services. If you have an Alexa-enabled device, you'll be able to access 33,000 audiobooks for free by simply saying, "Alexa, open RNIB talking books," and instantly enjoy a book from our unabridged collection. First, you'll need to register with RNIB Online Library and have an Amazon account to which your Alexa device is registered. You'll also be able to search by keyword, title, author, and with much, much more, and even use Surprise Me feature to ask for a random new title for you to next read. For more information about RNIB talking books, visit the RNIB website or call the RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999. Now we have a message from Dance Dorsty about an opportunity to get involved in dance sessions designed for people with visual impairment.
Come and learn to dance for free with Dance Dorsty. Choose from video and audio dance sessions, which have been designed for blind and partially sighted people. You can choose from standing or seated routines, or maybe try both. Sessions are available in English, Bengali, Gujarati, and Hindi. Visit dancedorsty.com and sign up free to start dancing.
Now we have our final block of local news. And starting us off this time, we get to hear from Ed.
Let them eat cake was the order of the day as a special party took place at Beacon Court in Sedgley to help celebrate dogs who make a difference to many people's lives. There was fun and laughter as the Guide Dog Party was hosted by the staff of the Beacon Centre for the Blind and Bromford Housing Association. The party was planned as part of the celebrations for Assistance Dog Week. Dogs at the party became the centre of attention and even got to tuck into specially made doggy cake. The VIP pooches also got to take home some dog-friendly bubbles. The event was held at Bromford's retirement living scheme at Beacon Court. Among the guests was the Deputy Mayor of Dudley, Councillor Sue Greenaway, who joined in the fun and got to meet members and residents as well as the guide dogs. Lisa Cowley, Chief Executive of the Beacon Centre, said we were delighted to welcome the Deputy Mayor of Dudley to our party. Guide dogs are very much part of the Beacon family, coming to work with our staff and supporting our members and the residents of Beacon Court. They are such amazing animals, and it was wonderful to be able to celebrate the fantastic work they and their assistants dogs do.
Cycling legend Hugh Porter has been named as Wolverhampton's cycling ambassador, a year ahead of the city hosting the Commonwealth Games cycling time trial. The Commonwealth Games gold medal winner has been handed the accolade by Wolverhampton Council to recognise his tremendous achievements in the sport. Mr. Porter, who claimed the medal in 1966, as well as four world titles in the individual pursuit, will act as a figurehead for cycling in the city in his ambassador role. The cyclist will help promote the Games as well as support other initiatives across Wolverhampton to help promote opportunities for residents to take up or continuing cycling. It comes as a new pathway for the exclusive use of cyclists and walkers is currently being developed through the central reservation along the entire length of Ring Road, St Peter's.
Members of two of the most popular boy bands of all time were given a guided tour of a pioneering music school. Brian McFadden from Westlife and Keith Duffy of Boyzone fame visited Resonance in Briley Hill last week to see the state-of-the-art facilities and meet members of staff. The pair, who performed together as Boyzone, were given a tour by Alex Prince, Lloyd Dacre and Rosanna Lefevre, who showed them the studios students are able to record in and the other facilities on offer. They recorded a video for the school's YouTube channel to talk about their visits and what they thought of the facilities. Brian McFadden said, "We've been here to check the place out and it's absolutely incredible. With all the studios and rehearsal rooms and classrooms, the place is just amazing. If you're a young and aspiring singer, musician or anything to do with music, you need to check this place out as it's just incredible." A spokesman for Resonance said, "It was great fun showing Keith Duffy and Brian McFadden around Resonance last week before they headed out on the road again with Boyzone. It's the second visit by major recording artists in the last few weeks at Resonance, following a visit by Beverly Knight on July the 16th. Resonance is opening up its doors to new students as the next academic year approaches.
A top US esports organisation has teamed up with Wolves. Evil Geniuses will now feature the Wolves logo on its team uniforms. A splash of Wolves gold will also be added to the Evil Geniuses logo. The partnership with Seattle-based Evil Geniuses follows investment in the esports organisation, which was founded in 1999 by Wolves Chinese founder Fosun. Evil Geniuses, valued at $255 million, is one of the most decorated in esports, winning 86 national and 102 international championship titles and $24 million in prizes. It currently competes in four of the world's biggest esports titles, League of Legends, Dota 2, Counter-Strike Go, and Valorant. And its team feature some of the world's most talented and followed players from the Americas, Asia, and Europe. The Evil Geniuses content team reaches more than 42 million people during last year's competitive season. Wolves and Fosun's Chinese team will also help power Evil Geniuses' expansion into the Asian market, where the popularity of esports has exploded in recent years. Evil Geniuses will get training facilities in China, including a training base for the League of Legends World Championship, should the team qualify for the event in Shenzhen later this year. Both teams will also work together to create English language content, sponsorship opportunities and joint branded merchandise, which will be shared with fans in the coming months. Wolves General Manager of Marketing and Commercial Growth, Russell Jones, said, "This is an incredibly exciting partnership for Wolves and Wolves Esports. We have a very lofty ambitions in esports, and this partnership allows us to learn from the very best."
A children's author has chosen Dudley's Wren's Nest National Nature Reserve as the location for his latest book. Oakham-born Barry Winton, who writes as Barry Hudley, is currently writing the second part of his fantasy adventure trilogy, The Cat and the Hooligoats, which is set in the Black Country. Barry, aged 67, is raising money for the Buttercup Sanctuary for Goats through sales of the books. The first part, And Suet Begins, has already been published, and the sequel, The Curse of the Weird Wolf, is to be released early in the new year. Barry, who now lives in Norton in Powys, has been given permission to use the names of two of the reserve's wardens, Rob Earnshaw and Heather Williams, in his new book, and will also use a member of the Friends of Wren's Nest as another character, with the group holding a fundraising raffle to decide who will feature. If Tolkien's Mordor was inspired by the Black Country, just think how magical Wren's Nest might be. After all, Rosny, the old name for Wren's Nest, is not only home to some rare species of animals and plant life, but it was also a key supplier of materials that fueled the industrial development of the region. Plus, it can trace its history back over 400 million years. With such an amazing background, it's perhaps not difficult to imagine that, across all those years, Rosny has seen more than its fair share of hideous creatures and even been base camp for various dark and mysterious forces, he explained. Barry wrote his first story when he was about 7 years old. The headmaster of Oakham County Primary School, where I was a pupil, seemed quite impressed with it when he read it out to the class, said Barry, who worked as an accountant in the Black Country before moving to Rochdale when he was 35. However, he used to walk by the Wren's Nest when he worked at Redmond Fisher in Bean Road, Tipton, and has fond memories of the place, meaning its selection for its inclusion in his latest work came naturally to the author.
Now we head over to our very own Flashback Roger, who, as always, has for us a bunch of amazing facts.
Hello everyone. Here we go with a list of things that you may not know about the lovely month of August. I love doing this section every week as there are always snippets that turn up that I find myself thinking, well, I'll go to the foot of our stairs, as my gran used to say. So, I hope you feel the same sometime. But now then, did you know that? On the 16th of August 1858, Queen Victoria sends President James Buchanan of the USA the first transatlantic telegraph. It said that it was providing an additional link between the nations whose friendship is founded on the common interest and reciprocal esteem. And the Loch Ness Monster is spotted for the first time in 565 AD. Historians discovered that the first possible sighting had actually occurred in the days of the semi-legendary St. Columba, who supposedly confronted Nessie on the 22nd of August 565. He allegedly invoked God and commanded the monster to go away and trouble not any man, and Nessie has been no bother since. There's some pretty fascinating holidays spread throughout August in the world, which are celebrated in different parts. On August the 1st, we have World Scout Scarf Day, as well as the official birthday and coronation of the King of Tonga. August the 5th is National Underwear Day in the US, and August the 11th is Mountain Day in Japan. August the 16th is National Rum Day in the US, and on August the 20th is World Mosquito Day. Phew, what a month that is. Unlike most other months, August has just one birthstone, peridot. One of the lesser known gems, peridots come in shades from grass green to a more earthly olive hue. They can only be found from two very different sources. They can be formed deep in the earth and expelled to the surface along with lava, and they can be found in meteorites. August was the fateful month for the ancient Roman city of Pompeii, because on August the 24th, 79 AD, Mount Vesuvius erupted near the city. The mountain spewed out great clouds of ash, smoke and pumice which rained down on Pompeii's clients. Unfortunately for Pompeii, that wasn't the end of it either. Next came molten lava, which buried the remaining residents 7 feet deep. And August is a hugely popular name in Sweden. In fact, it cracked the top 60 boys' names in the country a few years ago. Strangely enough though, despite its popularity, less than 20% of those named were actually born in August. Well, there you are, folks. August halfway through, and what a scorcher it's been so far. I'm off for a lie down in front of a big fan with a cool drink and a good book. And I might even have a dig round for next week's quiz. But until next week, this is Rod saying bye for now. Ta-ra, Ribbit!
Thank you for those fantastic facts, Roger. Up next, we now have Mina, who has for us a weather update.
The weather for this week looks to be mostly dry and settled, with plenty of sunny intervals. Temperatures will be steady throughout the week, typically hovering around 21 degrees. UV levels are expected to be moderate throughout the week. The sunrise and sunset times are 5:53 a.m. for the sunrise and 8:31 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday 13th of August, we have sunny intervals and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 20 degrees. On Saturday 14th of August, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 20 degrees. Moving on to Sunday 15th of August, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 21 degrees. On Monday 16th of August, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 21 degrees. For Tuesday 17th of August, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 21 degrees. Moving on to Wednesday 18th of August, it's light rain and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 21 degrees. And finally, on Thursday 19th of August, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 21 degrees. So that's your forecast for the week. As always, enjoy the weather.
Thank you for that weather update, Mina. Up next, we have Sounds of Nature, which this week is an uninterrupted recording of a coastal lagoon atmosphere recorded on Havergate Island in Suffolk. This recording was made by Lawrence Shove and was made available by the British Library. Now we have the latest football news from Wolves and West Bromwich Albion. Valerian Ishmael's Albion reign got off to a breathtaking start following a 2-2 draw at Bournemouth. In what was a pulsating game at Dean Court, the Baggies played with the energy and intensity their new boss craves. In the end, though, they had to settle for a point with the Cherries, showing that they too are likely to be amongst the sides chasing promotion this season. The hosts opened the scoring against the run of play in the 12th minute through Imolano Makundes. Albion pulled level, though, through Dario O'Shea. But Bournemouth scored their second goal with only their second shot on target when Philip Billing converted just after the interval. Albion again got themselves back on terms, though, through Callum Robinson. Both teams then had chances to win it, with Robinson going close for the Baggies and David Brooks threatening for the hosts. In the end, though, both sides had to settle for a point. Off the pitch, Darryl Dyke and Liam Delap are two of the names on Albion's shortlist as they work to sign a striker. The Baggies are on the hunt for a traditional centre-forward before the transfer window closes on August 31st. And Orlando City's Dyke and Man City's youngster Delap are two of the names under consideration. Dyke is well known to Valerian Ishmael, with the manager having signed him on loan for Barnsley last season. During his time at Oakwell, the 21-year-old scored 9 goals in 19 appearances. Barnsley were priced out of signing Dyke on a permanent basis, despite having an option to do so at the end of last season. And it is understood Orlando could be tempted to send the American out on loan again, albeit with a significant loan fee. Another player on Albion's shortlist is Delap, who is wanted by a large number of Championship clubs on loan. One of the hottest prospects in English football, Delap scored 27 goals in 24 Premier League 2 outings for Man City's under-23s last season. A host of Championship managers have gone on record to say they want to sign Delap this summer. Meanwhile, over at Molineux, a dominant second half was not enough for Wolves to find an equaliser as they finished their pre-season preparations with a 1-0 loss at home to Celta Vigo. The hosts started poorly, allowed the Spanish opposition to dominate the ball and pass it around with ease. Eventually, Largo Aspas put them ahead from the penalty spot. But in the second half, Wolves came alive and a string of big chances saw them come incredibly close to finding the net. The post denied them too, as they should have netted two or three times throughout the half. In the end, however, they fell to defeat, with Aspas' strike the difference. In other news, Bruno Lage has told Patrick Cotrone it is time to prove his worth to Wolves, while hinting that Rafa Mir is on his way out of the club. Italian striker Cotrone has netted once in pre-season, in the 1-0 win over Real Betis, and has regularly come off the bench in friendlies. During that time, Wolves fans have consistently sung his name, and despite suggestions he will leave the club, Lage has called on Cotrone to find his form. He said, "Even the game against Stoke, I said to Cotrone, 'You are here 2 years, every time on loan, but the fans are singing your song, so you need to prove something on the pitch. If you want to change something, it's not the change I give to you in training and in games. You have a song. They're waiting for you. It's true. Go there and show something for the people. That's the job.'" Fellow forward Mir is being tracked by Spanish giants Atletico Madrid, who have opened talks with Wolves over his signature. No fee has been agreed, but it is understood he is keen on the move, and Lage has hinted Mir does not want to return to England. He added, "It's like when you have a marriage. You want to marry your wife, but also your wife wants to marry you. I like him. I know him before, so we need to wait and see what happens. Top player. He's doing well. And I know he's part of the club, just like Cotrone." Up now, we have Tanya, who has for us an article about the Glorious 12th.
Hello, this is Tanya with an article about the Glorious 12th. The 12th of August marks the beginning of the annual grouse shooting season. Nowadays, this can be a contentious subject. The shooting season is accepted by many people, but others, such as conservationists, disagree with it. The focus of attention on the Glorious 12th is the red grouse. Lagopus, Lagopus is its Latin name, a medium-sized game bird found only in the British Isles. It lives mainly on Scottish and northern moorlands, nesting on the ground in a shallow scrape lined with moss and vegetation. Here, the female red grouse will lay approximately 6 to 9 eggs between April and May each year. The main foods eaten by the grouse are heather, berries, short stalks of cereal crops and insects found on the moorlands. If their ground nesting is undisturbed by walkers and dogs, the chicks are fully developed by August. Unfortunately, this is just in time for shooting parties to begin pursuing them, although some lucky ones will survive for future years. Many of the birds that are shot are gathered up to be sent by train to well-known restaurants where they are prepared and then cooked within hours of arrival. When the shooting season ends, the heather on the moors is burnt in a controlled manner, and then later in the year new growth starts to appear, producing more food for the next generation of grouse. Even if you've never eaten grouse, they may still be familiar to you from the label of a Scottish brand of whisky called the Famous Grouse.
Thank you for that article, Tanya. Coming up next, we have Craig and his Black Country Joke Book.
Hello, I'm Craig. I'm going to tell you some jokes from my Black Country joke book. This policeman came up to me and would sit with a pencil and a piece of very thin paper, and he said, "I want you to try someone for me." Here's another one for you. Somebody complimented me on my driving the other day. I left a little note on the windscreen. It said parking fine, so that was nice. And finally, I saw an advert in the shop window and said television sale, only £1, but the volume is stuck on full. So I thought to myself, well, I can't turn that down. I'm Craig, and that was my Black Country joke book.
Thank you for those jokes, Craig. And coming up next, we have Mina with the answers for this week's quiz.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Are you ready? Question 1. In what year was the first recording, sighting of the Loch Ness Monster made? And the answer here is 565 AD. Question 2. What infamous insects have a day to recognise them on the 20th of August? And the answer here is the mosquito. Question 3. What is the only birthstone of August? And the answer? Peridot. Question 4. Which volcano erupted and engulfed Pompeii? And the answer here is Mount Vesuvius. And finally, question 5. What is a very popular boy's name in Sweden? And the answer here is August. How did you do? Great, I hope. But if not, there's always another chance to have a go next week. Now, did you get the answer to this week's Guess the Sound question that Rob asked at the start of the show? Here's one more chance to hear it before I tell you the answer. The sound you just heard was a recording of someone frying an egg. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, we now head over to Graham Fisher for another edition of In My Opinion.
Hello. Recently, on one glorious summer Saturday, noting that the day had indeed commenced with the promise of set fair as indicated on my barometer, I submitted to carpe diem and seized the opportunity of tending the lawn. There being quite a lot of said lawn, I tackled it all in the one session instead of over the more usual two, and was rewarded with the muscle aches to prove it. So, with the other various human and animal occupants of Chamois idling in their own secret somewheres, I felt I had earned a bit of me time with my feet up, add a large glass of America's finest cask-strength bourbon, and I, too, was set fair. Regular followers of my ramblings will know my home is devoid of TV. Lob an arm in any direction, and you will connect with either a cat or a radio. So, adjusting the tuning dial on one of the cats, I stumbled across some station or other playing oldies. Track of the moment was Lou Reed's Walk on the Wild Side from 1972. The reason my ears pricked up at this gritty urban portrait, describing a series of individuals on their way to New York with its visceral references to then-taboo subjects including transvestites, male prostitution, drugs and sexual practices, is that it whisked me back to that same year, 1972, and a similarly sunny Saturday in the north of England during my undergraduate days. I was never what one would call a gifted student, and was covetous of my fellows who could suck in knowledge as if they were straw. The attainment of my modest clutch of qualifications necessitated much time-consuming graft woven in a matrix of frustration at my intellectual inadequacies. The amount of hair I pulled out, I wonder I'm not bald. But a lazy Saturday afternoon was one luxury I granted myself, if only to recharge the batteries and stay sane. There I was in the refectory, where I noticed a solitary man seated at a table, despite numerous other people sitting disinterestedly at other tables nearby. He looked lonely, so I asked if I could join him. "Please do," he replied softly. "I'm Howard." Let me describe Howard. Mid-twenties, chisel-featured, ascetically thin but finely proportioned. I guess he would have nudged way over 6 feet tall in his stocking toes, and his long flaxen locks hung over expensively attired shoulders. He was languidly puffing on a long churchwarden pipe, and as the wisps of smoke wafted past his cheeks, I couldn't avoid noticing that his eyes, fixed in the middle distance, were twin pools of sadness. We sat quietly for some minutes before I broke the silence and inquired if he was okay. He heaved a sigh of despair, looked me in the eye, and poured out, "I am heartbroken. My boyfriend has just left me." How upsetting is that? Howard, you see, was the chair of the local group of what was then known as the Gay Liberation Front. It all fell into place. Students may assume polarised political views, but they are, in my experience, generally libertarian in personal attitudes. Thus, whilst I'm not aware that Howard was victimised for his sexuality, as was prevalent in the big bad world beyond the comfort zone of academia, I am prepared to accept that those quite literally on the outside were oblivious to his angst and simply did not know how to react. Perhaps, and I do not criticise them for their ignorance, they didn't even try, and instead just chose to walk on the other side. I understand there's a story in the Bible that runs along similar lines. Howard and I chatted until well into late afternoon. I never saw him again, but that one meeting educated the youthful me in just how desperately isolated some people can feel simply because they are what they are. The mind doth work in curious ways, and no sooner had I remembered Howard, I linked to memories of a man from the same era, George, whom I worked alongside in my holidays, to earn a bit of bread, man. And I still reel at his pain when this dignified and unassumingly quintessential English businessman learnt that his son was a transvestite and suspected homosexual. His spirit was broken more than his pride, and shortly afterwards, although not recorded as such on his certificate, George died of shame. Fast forward to half a century later, where we do not bat an eyelid at the likes of comedian Eddie Izzard and artist Grayson Perry, who are known as much for their feminine attire as they are for their talents. Such once-debauched conduct is fated, with the gay pride movement embracing lesbians, gays, transvestites, bisexuals, transsexuals, non-binary, non-identifying, and more in a cornucopia of those declaring an alternative lifestyle. There will surely come a time when the term alternative becomes an irrelevance and everything becomes part of the mainstream because, well, everything is mainstream. Since my naive encounter with Howard, I now revel in the company of numerous gay friends and family members happy to declare their sexuality and feeling similarly unthreatened. Lest we forget, there are countries and cultures that lag way behind us in acceptance, and in an increasingly globalised world, therein lies a challenge. It's not insurmountable, it may just take time. 125 years after The Love That Dare Not Speak Its Name, a phrase from the 1892 poem Two Loves by Lord Alfred Douglas, was pejoratively cited at Oscar Wilde's trial. That very same love is now recognised, acknowledged, rejoiced and celebrated. Within the grand scheme of social evolution, this is a speedy transformation. It was only in 1967 that the Sexual Offences Act repealed elements of sexual criminality. Not all, but it was a start. Though the trend is progressive, it is not a perfect process, and there are occasional stutters. The provisions of Section 28 of the Local Government Act of 1988, widely described at the time as a step backwards, sought to ban the promotion of homosexuality by local authorities and in Britain's schools. Promotion, as used by the Thatcher government, was a contentious word. More accurately, the clause meant in practice that teachers were effectively barred from discussing same-sex relationships with students, and councils were forbidden from stocking libraries with literature or films that contained gay or lesbian themes. Amidst tumultuous opposition, the clause was repealed first in Scotland and then England. In 2009, David Cameron apologised for Clause 28 and admitted it had been a mistake. A contemporary example of attempts to reconcile opposing views is panning out under public gaze at the very moment I'm writing this, whereby the Scottish Government is deliberating over a piece of legislation seeking to criminalise allegedly offensive language against minorities, including personal opinion and satire, as a hate crime. Depending on one's view, this is either a safeguarding of those minorities' rights or a grotesque attack on free speech and humour. There's just no absolute answer to that dichotomy, and, as usual, a compromise will probably lie somewhere down the middle. But these examples do illustrate the difficulties in reaching a resolution, and what may happen when the resolution itself be thrust into obsolescence as society's own attitudes change. There is a difference between reparation and rewriting history. Much as we may be tempted to remove unsavoury chapters from our past, there is no nation on earth that doesn't have its dark chapters. To eradicate them from future recountings would not only be a travesty of the truth, it would also deny us the opportunity to learn from those mistakes and modify our attitudes accordingly. As the novelist and philosopher George Santayana put it succinctly, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. We should be Catholic, small c, in accepting our mistakes and refer to them as a springboard to inform our future actions. We cannot do this if they are erased from history. It is now considered monstrous that the genius mathematician Alan Turing, he of Bletchley Park code-breaking fame, should have elected chemical castration rather than prison. What a choice, eh? For submitting to the love that dare not speak its name. Try to imagine the torment of the man who felt his best option was to swallow a cyanide capsule in 1954, aged just 41. His pardon by Prime Minister Gordon Brown in 2009 for the appalling way he was treated could, of course, never bring Turing back. But the recognition of the historical facts does help alter the trajectory of our route along the never-ending path to ultimate social enlightenment. Not merely a step forward, but genuine progress. And so, after 50 years of liberation, changes in law, public displays, pressure groups, characters and celebrities, in which the whole scene has gone totally volt-face from Wilde's time of incarceration in Reading Jail, I was saddened to hear recently of a celebrated footballer who, despite his trappings of fame and wealth, admitted to missing companionship because he is afraid of revealing he is gay. Justin Fashanu was the first black professional footballer to openly proclaim being gay way back in 1990. And although he paid a terrible price for his admission, the note accompanying his suicide in 1998 was testament to his distress. After 3 decades, his coming out no longer sets any precedent. Yet, here in 2020, there are still those whom, for whatever reason, are fearful of the consequences of revealing themselves simply because they are what they are. Why must our fellows of any sexual orientation feel tormented to the extent they take their own life? My overarching question is, why does it still matter when, in the final analysis, it is a purely personal consideration that is nobody else's business? My answer, or should I say my fervent hope, is that it will eventually diminish to the point that it does not. Looking beyond the gay scene, that same question and answer session applies equally to the catalogue of society's current ailments: racism, sexism, religious intolerance, ageism, etc., etc. When we strike the balance of equating the inadequacies of our past with using them to constructively inform our future, a natural and logical consequence will be that they will all cease to be an issue. In the pursuit of that utopia, more aspirational and practical, I admit, but it is our civic duty to try, we have a long way to go, and it is in the nature of the human condition that there are those who choose alternative routes. Should forbearance and tolerance continue to grow, then it will be to our universal good fortune that all sides get less wild by the day. And on that optimistic reflection, I would like to dedicate this piece in memory of songwriter Lou Reed, who embarked on his own last walk on the wild side when he died of liver complications on the 27th of October 2013, aged 71.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us. Stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!